The new film The Aeronauts tells a little-known chapter in the history of flight, the quest to go higher than anyone in history in a balloon. Oscar-winning actor Eddie Redmayne stars as scientist James Glacier, who attempted to set the altitude record back in 1862. Redmayne won the Oscar in 2015 for playing Stephen Hawking in The Theory of Everything. Felicity Jones co-starred in that film. She co-stars in this film as well, playing balloon pilot Amelia Wren. In this scene, the two prepare for takeoff.
Are you ready?
Yes, I just need to retake my ground readings. Do one final check of the equipment.
Well, my equipment was all prepared in advance. Now, don't touch this rope, Miss Gadesha, as it will let out the gas.
I don't know how a balloon works.
The Aeronauts opens in theaters tomorrow, and joining me now is Eddie Redmayne. Welcome to Here and Now.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Thank you so much for joining us. And we should say, by the way, that Felicity Jones's character was not a real person. She's based on several female aeronauts. But your character, James Glacier, was a real person. Tell us about him.
Well, that's absolutely true. So the film is, there's a wonderful book called Falling Upwards, which is a kind of history of air ballooning. And our film is sort of inspired by some of the best bits, almost sort of greatest hits of some of those moments. Mm-hmm. And James Glacier was a 19th century sort of early meteorologist at a time when the idea of predicting the weather was sort of deemed absurd. And he ended up, I mean, the real figure had clergymen and doctors up and down the country taking measurements on what the weather was doing around Britain. And he was the first person to sort of collate those pieces of information and try to find patterns in it. But he went up in a balloon and was desperate to try and everyone at the time, science was being used and adventure were being used. People were climbing Everest, going mm-hmm. to the poles, and people were going up in balloons in competitions to sort of see who go the highest. But no one was necessarily using it to find out information about the unknown. And so he was that's what he was attempting to do.
Nobody believed that you could even ever figure out how to predict the weather.
Exactly. It was deemed crazy. And he was sort of looked down on, and meteorology was seen as sort of hocus pocus. And for me, one of the things I found riveting is it was a moment in history which I knew nothing about.
Right.
And it actually never occurred to me that there was a time when people, of course, didn't have any idea what was coming. So that was one of the elements I found intriguing.
Well, the other thing about it is that, you know, we think about the history of flight and we think about airplanes and we think about, you know, the Wright brothers or whoever. But I guess I never really spent a lot of time thinking about the fact that before there were airplanes, we had to figure out how to get balloons up in the air, and that was a whole part of history all on its own.
You know, there was a book for me by Julian Barnes, he's one of my favorite authors, called The Levels of Life. And the first chapter of that basically talked about early balloon flight and what it must have been like to be the first people to see the world from the sky. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful meditation, that book. And I read this maybe eight years ago, and I found it very impactful. And so when this script arrived, it had all that wonder. It had all the idea of looking up and the pioneering sense of the unknown that I found kind of intriguing, mixed with a kind of old-fashioned adventure. So it was that sort of combination. But one of the things that was interesting from a filmmaking point of view is we're now, of course, so numb to seeing the world from the sky because people go on aeroplanes.
Right.
It was how do you make an audience look at that anew and afresh, and going up in an air balloon is a very specific thing, particularly gas balloons, which is what these guys flew in because it's so silent,
right.
But you're completely at the whim of the elements.
Almost all of this film takes place in a balloon. What was it like to film? How high up did you go, or how often were you actually in a balloon versus in something that made it look like you were in a balloon?
Well, so the important differentiation is these were gas balloons. Mm-hmm. So they don't really exist in the UK anymore. That is to say, a helium or hydrogen balloon taped in by a net, basically, and attached to a basket. And the way you go up is by letting it go. And the way you come down is by pulling a rope that lets the gas out. And the other thing you can use is you can throw off ballast to make you go higher. So really, they built a balloon for our film. They recreated the Mammoth, the famous balloon from this flight. But in our country, there aren't many people who fly gas balloons anymore. So they built one, and we went up on our first few days of filming. Felicity and I were in costume, and they shot us from helicopters and drones. And Felicity Jones, who's in the film with me, does astonishing things in this movie as far as risk is concerned. And she was sitting up in the hoop of the balloon, despite the fact that we were thousands of feet in the air. But it was incredibly peaceful and very beautiful while these drones and the helicopters were shooting, and when they left, they sort of disappeared off once they got the footage they needed, and we just had to land. But of course, the technology hasn't changed for 150 years, and so our landing was particularly catastrophic, Felicity very nearly killed herself. It was a scary few days of filming in the balloons, but with one really quite intense crash. And from then on, we moved into studios where this basket was suspended around blue curtains. And although, interestingly, they refrigerated the studios so that you could feel the cold and the breath.
Think you were at 30,000 feet.
Exactly.
Let's listen to a scene from the movie, actually, which, of course, shows how dangerous ballooning can be. You're flying into a storm. Here it is.
We need to batten down. Please put on your wet weather clothing. There are no prizes for obstinacy. James, if you won't listen to me, listen to that.
Wait, not one of my readings suggested a storm.
Well, that's what it is. And we're inside a cumulus, which is precisely where we shouldn't be.
Don't worry.
We should say, by the way, that this is not the first time that you've been in a film with Felicity Jones, who plays your wife in The Theory of Everything.
Exactly, yeah. So one of the great appeals for me with this film when I was sent the script was the idea of getting to play opposite Felicity again, who I just adore as an actor and as a friend. And that weird thing that actors have, that often you become very close to people when you're working, and you push each other and get to learn each other's process, and then you go off and start a new thing. And actually to come back and work with someone picking up where you left off was an intriguing idea, and we loved it. We were also stuck in a tiny basket for months on end, so it was important we got on.
Well, there's something else that I noticed about the two films, which is that in The Theory of Everything, you were playing Stephen Hawking, someone with ALS, for much of the movie. You had to act without talking. And in this film, you're up so high in the sky that you're so cold, you're frozen, and you also have to do kind of the same thing.
That's exactly, the character gets hypoxia at a moment in which Felicity's character has to kind of save their lives. But it was interesting. One of the things I love about what I do is that you get to go and research it, and you're given the freedom to go and play around it. So the hypoxia element of the film, we actually went, the director and I, to this place where they put pilots who are training into these tanks and change the air pressure to recreate what it's like at 35,000 feet. And what's interesting is that you feel, rather than feeling dreamy, and you actually get incredibly confident, that they make you do these tests of sort of 1+1, and you're sitting there, and they make you do it every 3 seconds, and they go 1+1. You go, obviously 1+1 is 4, stupid. You know, you get sort of more and more drunk and confident, weirdly. So that was interesting, and bringing all those sort of things that you learn and trying to find ways into the piece with it. So, but no, you're right. There were definitely similarities. I mean, there was a moment when I've spent a lot of the past 6 years in tweed or in period drama costumes. So I was sort of looking to do an American contemporary piece, and then this came along, play an English period drama playing a scientist, and yet there was something in it that was, it wasn't necessarily what I've been looking for, but it was something that I found completely unique, so wanted to pursue.
One thing that is different about this film for you is that you are now an Academy Award winning best actor. How has that changed your life and your career?
Gosh, it's a bit, you know, it's an interesting question. I think that the reality is that it gives you more choice, and that's something, you know, for many years when you're starting out as an actor, you audition for things and you get what you're given, and you're lucky enough to be employed, and then something like The Theory of Everything happens, and suddenly you're sent more things and given more of a sense of choice. But it's interesting because when you're starting out as a kid, you get sent a script and it's like, Cate Blanchett is attached to this with this director and this director, and that comes with a sense of expectation, or you go, oh, those are brilliant actors and that's a wonderful thing, whereas suddenly you're being given the script before there's a director attached or early on in the process, and so it's interesting, suddenly it's your thoughts and ideas and taste rather than that of someone else.
And we should also say that there are probably some listeners who are hearing us talk to you right now and thinking, I don't care about this new movie. I want to know what it's like to be Newt Scamander, Fantastic Beasts. This is the latest Harry Potter franchise. Do you get stopped in the street by especially young people who want you to perform spells?
You do. Particularly, there's a particular age when magic is still completely real. in which I always feel like I let people down by not being able to sort of whip out a Niffler from my pocket or a sort of extraordinary magical creature of some description. And it's an amazing thing. It's a really wonderful thing because you make films in these vacuums. And whereas with theatre, you see an audience every night, you can feel whether they're coming on the ride with you or enjoying it. But what's weird with films is you make them at this particular moment in time and then they come out a year later. And even though you sort of know they're in cinemas or they're streaming, you don't necessarily know that people are, it feels odd that the people are actually going out and watching it. So when people come and react with excitement and joy, and particularly something that's aimed at or with kids in mind, it's really special.
Well, I have to say that I have wanted to go in a hot air balloon my entire life, and I want to even more now after watching this film, although I would stop at maybe 15,000 feet and then just come right back down.
I think that would be a wise idea for all of us.
That is Eddie Redmayne, Academy Award-winning actor who stars in the new film The Aeronauts. Eddie Redmayne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
And that film opens tomorrow.